from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners. Anybody can tell you what a good fantasy quarterback looks like, but it's the receivers that make or break your team. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive in the position that matters most, wide receivers. From the route trees to who plays better in man or zone, we provide the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Costas does it again!
Again!
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Welcome back to Play Testy. It is episode 104. If you're listening on drop date, it's July 25th. This is the official podcast of temporary depression caused by watching baseball, also known as the official Red Sox podcast of WEI. Before we get going, hit that subscribe button on wherever you're listening, get your podcast, hit the subscribe button, rate us 5 stars. We really appreciate it. Find us on YouTube on the WEI page. We have the Play Testy playlist there. You can find us and hit the thumbs up. We really appreciate it. And you can find us on the socials at Play Testy on both Twitter and Instagram. Here with Sammy, here with Pat, and the Red Sox after an awesome win on Friday that had me thinking that they were about to turn the corner here and the Yankees were going to end their post-star break slump. But they lose an absolute heartbreaker with all of us in attendance on Saturday. Down to the final strike, and pain as Trent Grisham, of all people, brings the pain, and God, just pain. And then Sunday, just a demoralizing defeat. The way I think about it, it's like after the, just like from the All-Star break on, like after the Dodgers series, they got swept and it sucked, but it was 3 games and they'd been playing so well. It's like, okay, like we're going to see them go to Colorado and hopefully take some games there. After the Rockies series, they dropped 2 out of 3, and that sucks. But at that point, we had the core extension, and that was great. And Craig Breslow declared them buyers, and that was great. And there was reason for hope. They were coming home, a couple of tough ballparks for pitchers and not having your bullpen. But after this one, I mean, there's just really not much of a silver lining here. It's just a demoralizing feeling. The thing that scares me is that it feels exactly like last year. Like they were riding super, super high. And then the week of the deadline is when it got cold. And in your head, you're like, they're a game out. I want them to go for it and compete. But at the same time, I don't know if they're going to get past the deadline here and you're going to regret having them bought or them having bought. It's scary how similar the trajectory of the seasons are. I know that there's no one in between them in a playoff spot right now, that the first team out, but trajectory-wise, it feels so, so similar, and that is incredibly scary, especially considering the daunting schedule they have coming up.
Yeah, Gordo, I agree. Trajectory-wise, vibe-wise, the way it feels, it's a lot like the last two seasons. However, I think you kind of alluded to it. There's only one team ahead of them right now, and they're a game out of a playoff spot. So it's not as bad as it feels. If you're a Red Sox fan, you should not feel good right now. That was a demoralizing series, as Gordo put it. The last loss was demoralizing. The loss on Saturday night, I'd say that's probably the worst loss of the season. You're a strike away from winning at home. You lose to your biggest rival on a fly ball off the wall that had, what, 9%? Hit chance or something incredibly low. very unlikely loss, yet it happened, and then you get smoked the next day, play like crap, defense looks awful. But all that's true, and still you're a game out. So I think that we need to go, for our mental health, we all need to go big picture right now, because that series sucked, but the season has still gone well. They're doing a lot better than we thought they'd do, and they're still in a spot where they should be buying, in my opinion, a game out. I can't take punting for a third year in a row. I can't take the buy and sell shit. Just buy. Doesn't have to be crazy. That's where my head's at. I'm trying to go big picture tonight, as I want to sleep before a long work week, which is going to be very difficult after the series.
There's no part of my head that thinks they should pivot to selling. There's going to be people there. Pat, are you there? Or like, is any of us at that point? Because Sammy, you're not. I'm not. Pat, any part of you?
No, but at the same time, and it's crazy because of how much we've just invented about not wanting to be buying and selling. If you get some form of package like the Angels just got for Carlos Estevez for Kenley, and then you parlay that into, you know, maybe a Tanner Scott or someone more controllable, I can live with that kind of move. But blowing it up, giving up, moving everything, absolutely not. You still have to add to this team. Like both of you said, you're game out. You are. That's a fact. You have an absolute hellish gauntlet. You have 3 with the Mariners, 3 with the Rangers, 3 with the Royals, 3 with the Astros, 3 with the Rangers, 4 with the Orioles, 3 with the Astros, 3 with the Diamondbacks.
Oh, my God.
So,
is that straight?
That's straight.
Are you serious? I knew it was bad. So, is it really that bad?
It's bad. So, you have Slayton coming back. You have Chris Martin coming back. In all likelihood, you have Casas back, hopefully halfway through, maybe 3/4 of the way through that stretch right there. So you have reinforcements on the way. You do. And Tanner won't be this bad the rest of the way. Cutter won't be this bad the rest of the way.
Why do you say that, though?
Help.
Why do you say that? Why do you say that, though? Because do you attribute and how did his job tonight? But we all watched the game, and he didn't throw very many strikes, and Jeff just definitely did not look anywhere close to as in command of the game as he has for the majority of the season. But are you saying that because Hauk after the game said this, he says he thinks it's a mechanical thing. He says he feels great. He doesn't think his body's wearing down. You buy into that? Because I just see the innings thing, and Hauk's already a good amount past his career high, and Cutter is probably going to hit that career innings in one or two starts. So do you think it's not a matter of workload? Because that's what scares me. It's like they look like this in July. What's it like in August and September?
Yeah. So I do think it's workload related. But that being said, I don't think it's real wear and tear. I think it's an endurance thing. And especially in Tanner's case, where if he's pinpointing it as mechanics, as execution, that's probably best case scenario. Because having Bailey in-house is a luxury you have not had in years prior. You make second half adjustments. If he's not going to be throwing for high velo, if his stuff's not going to go where he wants it to go, you adjust, you adapt, you move forward. So I don't think we'll see first half Tanner the rest of the year, but I don't think we'll see what we saw in Colorado in tonight at Fenway. I think there's going to be somewhere in the middle. I think he's going to find a happy medium, get to the end of the season. And Cutter's the same way, just not to such a high degree. We've said all year long, Cutter's going to find that kind of level. He's going to get fatigued coming over that fatigue. He's going to be a high threes, low fours guy. We've said that all year long. I think that's what we see the rest of the way. Right now, it's, you know, you're fresh out of the break. You took a week off. You had some, besides the Rockies games, some tough opponents. You just keep going. You keep pushing. You adapt. You adjust. Go.
Yeah, and it's something they're going to need to know how to do in their careers. So it's going to have to happen at some point, and what better time than the present? But the truth is, if those guys aren't going to keep – and to be fair, both of them did keep you in games. Hauk wasn't at his best, but he exits the game. They're only down 2. Cutter certainly wasn't at his best, but they were winning that game for the majority of it. So they did keep you in the games. But the truth of the matter is, if those guys struggle down the stretch, I don't care if they trade for Skubal or Crochet. Like if they struggle down the stretch, you're not going to be able to make the playoffs with those two guys struggling. So it a big part of this is related to how those guys are gonna adjust and figure out how to pitch in basically uncharted waters for them. And we put a lot of emphasis on the deadline, but a lot of where this season goes is going to be dependent on that.
I'm looking at Houck's velocity. It's really kind of in the same spot that it's been for the vast majority of the season, right around 95, like topping out a little above. Tonight he was at 94.9, I think was his highest. So it's not, he's not the exact same, but it's not like there's a big drop off. So I think it might just be repeating his delivery, probably. I'm not a pitching expert, but if it's not the velocity, I would guess it's a mechanical thing. Maybe it's just fatigue. So the problem is, I would love to say, oh, you phantom IL stint, give him 2 weeks off. Easy. But you can't. You don't have the arms. I'd love to say, oh, skip a start. You'd be kind of making it risky. I know you got James Paxton now, and you'd have to put Criswell back in the rotation, so I don't know if you can skip a start either. And it's like, what do you do? What do you do with the guy? I just kind of the good part is, even when he's not great, like tonight, one of you just said it, he kept them in the game. So it's not like you're getting a poor quality outing from him. You're just not getting an ace quality outing. So I think with Houck, just let him keep going. If there starts to be red flags, jump on him right away. But right now, I don't think it's, I think he might just be in a rut. That might be it. And the counter argument to that would be, well, he's at his, he's like cruising past his most innings pitched in a season. And I'd say, yeah, he is. We got to see what happens. You can't predict the future. So I think just with Houck, you just got to hope he figures it out. It's simple as that. He's talented. We've seen it. He's got to navigate these deep waters. That's just it.
Yeah. And the other thing, of course, that has been the true story of the post All Break Red Sox is the bullpen.
Yep.
They have led. It sounded better before Sunday's game because they didn't lead in Sunday's game, but they've led in 7 of the 9 games that they've played. And they have lost 7 of the 9 games that they have played since the All-Star break. They have blown 8 saves since the All-Star break. It feels so repetitive to talk like, but their bullpen was in a fine spot until Martin and Slayton went down. And obviously it coincides at a point in time of the season where arms that you felt like you could count on in April and May are maybe showing warts is the right way to put it. Maybe wearing down is the right way to put it. But there was a point in time where Brendan Bernardino, you could put in the game and feel amazing about it every single time. There was even a point in time where you could put Greg Weiser in the game and feel really good about it. There was a point in time where Zach Kelly basically was untouchable. And I don't know if it's as much that these guys aren't as good as we thought. I think it really is a lot more due to the workload increase. They're being asked a lot, and it's not just a workload increase. It's a stress increase. Like, you're asking these guys to hold short leads in the 8th inning. You're asking for save chances for some of these guys.
Dude, Bailey Horn on Saturday. Remember what you said at the game on Saturday? Bailey Horn came up kind of out of nowhere, and he's just been put in these insane spots over and over. And it's not even like
first debut.
Say it again.
Like it was his. Like he was called up for his debut.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
He's never pitched in the majors, and here he is.
Yeah, and it's not even like a "what is Alex Cora doing" thing. It's like there's nobody else to go to. Yeah. Nobody else is getting the job done. It's not choosing the wrong guy. It's just guys are not performing.
And I think one thing to circle back to is like it's an old mantra for a reason. You can never have enough relievers. Postseason, get to the postseason, World Series, whatever it may be. Because all year long, we've had this insane surplus. Brendan Bernardino started in AAA. Like, they had so much depth, and they still do. They're just not healthy. Whitlock goes down. Okay, so Criswell goes from the pen or AAA, whatever. He slides into the back spot. Winkowski's up and down. Slayton gets hurt. Chris Martin has the anxiety thing, and then he also gets hurt early. You never know. So it's a mix of everything. Fatigue, guys like you know, Criswell, who's been, I mean, great for a 1 year, $1 million contract. He's been awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wink's throwing a lot of innings. Bernie and Zach, I feel like, are throwing every single day. So the guys that you can rely on, you're squeezing every drop of juice out of them. And then on top of that, you have nothing to supplement it because you guys like Horn, Boozer, first year up, can't really bank on him in high stress situations. And then Chase Anderson was just, I'm giving up runs, whether we're ahead or behind. So that's that. But that being said, going to the deadline, yeah, reliever prices are high. You need relievers. You need starters too, I would argue. You need another starter and relievers, but you need pitching. That is why it's a mantra. You see it here now. You go nowhere without a full bullpen and a full rotation.
Pat, I agree. You're totally, absolutely correct. And I before it even starts, because you know there's going to be a small faction of fans who say, well, they can't trade for a relief pitching help. The price is too expensive. The Mets, the Royals, the Diamondbacks, the Mariners, the Yankees, the Orioles, the Cubs, the Brewers, the Phillies, and the Padres have all added pitching. Those are all teams kind of in your realm other than like the Phillies, because wow. So I don't want to hear that. The other teams are doing it. You have a really good farm system. You're right in the race. The Royals got relief help like 3 weeks ago, by the way. So credit to them. That was very smart. Get ahead of it. But still, there's no excuse not to add pitching. If the Red Sox don't add pitching more than Paxton, I'm going to be very upset. And I think they'll do it. But just saying, on the off chance they don't, I don't want to hear any excuses. That is a F-minus performance by the front office, if that's how it goes.
And they're going to. And don't forget Johan Ramirez. I know no one wants to talk about a guy with a 6 ERA, but it's a guy who's shown good stuff in the past and elite extension. A guy that the Dodgers liked. I'll say that. A guy the Dodgers liked, and he's shown flashes, and I know there's been a lot of and I don't know if this point in the season for this team is necessarily the best spot to get him to where he could potentially go, but that's an arm. I agree, Sammy, they need to add, and there's no excuse to not add because you need another reliever, and I would argue you also need another bat. I know they've hit pretty well since the break, but I'm not letting that go by the wayside because we can see an obvious gaping hole in the lineup, in the middle infield, when they face left-handed pitching. But just to keep it on pitching, it doesn't need to be like they don't need like it's like they're short a closer. It's not like for the most part these games. I know lately Jansen has not been himself, but like we've seen Jansen go through ruts and he always ends up coming out on the other side. I'm so unbothered, not unbothered, but I'm unconcerned about the future of Jansen. But it's getting to him. You need a guy that you can just count on to get you through like the sixth inning. Like you got to bridge that gap, and it doesn't need to be anything spectacular. Like we were talking about it on radio today about some of those guys that got traded in 2021, and like Hanna Robles, I know people only like to remember like the 2022 Robles that stunk, but he was huge for you in 21 and you got him for nothing. Austin Davis helped at times. Like you can get guys, and we talked about Clay Holmes, the Yankees got that year, was a guy with a high 4 ZRA with the Pirates that turned in a low ZRA once he got to the Yankees. You can find these guys, and I know no one wants to hear it, but if you want to get a bullpen arm for the sixth or seventh inning, you don't need to target the top of the market, especially in the position the Sox are in. Like you can get guys. Just got to get a guy who throws from the left side that can strike guys out. We talk about Andrew Nardi all the time. I know he's not going to be like a low-cost option because I think it's pretty well documented that he's got good shit. But that's a guy who you can get with control for like an outside the top 12 prospect, I think.
You don't even need a guy with control. You can go the cheaper route and get a guy who doesn't have control. You just need a guy for these next few months. You can address the bullpen again in the offseason, but my issue is, Gordo, I agree. Johan Ramirez, people scoff at the signing. He's almost got a, or the trade, whatever, however they got him. My God.
Waiver claim.
Johan Ramirez, whatever. Claimed him. Great.
Johan Santana.
But people, same pitcher. But people scoff at that. But no, like depth is important. You need guys like that. They come out of note. Cam Boozer, he was depth. He was not even talked about early in the season. And now he's one of your better guys. That said, for this team, this personnel, I would strongly, strongly prefer a veteran arm, a guy who's been there, someone who could you know, exude confidence and calmness to the rest of the bullpen, because it feels like it's almost contagious when it starts to rain, it pours with the bullpen. So, and that's why today, also on radio with you, I kept mentioning Andrew Chafin, who's in his mid-30s. He's been around for like 14 seasons. He's still a very good pitcher. He's not going to be crazy expensive because he's not a closer. He's a setup guy. He's left-handed. He gets whiffs. He gets strikeouts. I think he checks all the boxes. He's not the only option. There's other guys like that. But I totally agree. I like the depth. I like guys like Ramirez who have upside. But for this move, I much prefer a veteran right here.
I agree. Veteran doesn't need to be elite, but I agree. Someone that you know can do it. And the move here to me is you bring in Johan Ramirez, doesn't have options, and you bring in someone else, regardless of whether they have options. But, and then you option Weissert, you option Bailey Horn. And we talked about how the Red Sox just didn't have the ability to bring up relievers at all during the stretch. Like, namely in Colorado, we had those conversations. It's like, who are you going to call up? Like Brad Keller, Trey Winginter. Now, if Bailey Horn and Greg Weissert are in AAA and someone gets hurt, those are guys that you can go to, and hopefully they'll have been rested in AAA and you can feel a little bit better about it.
Dude, Trey Winginter. How did we forget about him? How do we forget about big enter?
One thing I do feel like is worth mentioning. We saw a glimpse of it today, not anything great, but having Paxton now in that fifth spot in the rotation, you have Criswell now in the Chase Anderson role, which is a massive upgrade. So that lengthens the pen a bit, but you still need those back end arms. You can't rely on these young guys to go out and just be nails every time in the seventh, eighth inning. They need arms, but there is some in-house coming. Having Criswell in that spot now makes life a lot easier if you have Hauk like does tonight.
Pat, does it though? Because I get it tonight, but tonight is such a rare circumstance where it's like you needed an arm to go to and everyone was unavailable. And last night, everyone had been used. But up until last night, I think it was like 48 something of Anderson's 52 innings were deemed like incredibly low leverage innings. So it's like, yeah, it's an upgrade, but like those innings are all being thrown when the game is like out of line.
Yeah, but then you think even to last night, right? We're not even taking Chase Anderson innings because that was high leverage. Last night, Cutter Crawford went 4 2/3. You go Criswell there, you're getting to the seventh, and you're going Bernie, Kelly, Jensen. Instead, you go Crawford, and then Bernie, and then Wink, and then Boozer. Like, it's just a giant mishmash. If you have a guy there who can piggyback the starter, that's big. Or if the starter gives you six, good. Criswell can give you one. It's a weapon. You can use him in 2-3 inning spurts. You can use him in one. It's all about where he fits in. Chase Anderson couldn't even do that. Chase Anderson was very much like, if no one else in the bullpen can physically throw a baseball right now, or we're up by five or down by five, Criswell at least gives you some valuable innings and can give you multiple of those in one game.
Question for you guys, because Pat, you got me thinking. Would you hate the idea if they let's pretend that they pull off Jameson Taillon and they make that trade. Would you hate James Paxton being put into the bullpen and sort of being used the piggy guy? I don't know how, because we complained about it in the past when they've had piggyback guys, because it shortens the pen, and like when you need guys for one inning, it makes them need to be used like every day and kind of wears them down when you have like two long guys there. But it could be interesting. I feel like Paxton in shorter spurts also could keep his velo up and he'd be pretty effective there. But I don't know if that's a road I want to go down.
Yeah, I think that's. I could see where you're coming from, but I think that's a huge gamble.
Especially when your bullpen are like, it's not like just your starters are wearing down. Like the bullpen guys are obviously wearing down, and like that's just going to make Zach Kelly get used every day. And then by September, it's going to be like,
yeah, I would rather get 5 to 6 semi decent innings one time a week than 2 good innings twice a week.
You know what's an issue that the Red Sox need to address, and this is more of a, it's more of a 2025 thing, but it's affecting them right now. They don't have any high minors pitching. Like, that's why they got Trey Wingenter. Jokes aside, that's why they got Joely back. They kept him around. That's why they got Jason Alexander. And you just, none of those guys are depth that you feel reasonably confident in succeeding at the major league level. I'm going through the roster right now, and it's just so, it's so bleak. I think Joely might be the best option out of these guys, which is, I mean, I don't need to explain how not good, how not ideal that is. It's so, Grant Gambrell could give him a go, but he's a starter. You probably don't want to take him out of that role. I don't know, man. There's so, like, again, I want to reiterate what I said at the beginning of the show. It's not as bad as it feels right now, but there are some issues that need to be addressed that I can't fathom how they have not already been addressed. How is there not more new arms brought in for this high minors kind of up and down kind of guy role? You brought in Criswell. Who else?
It's hard, though. It's because those guys don't come available on the free agent market. Like, Criswell was the was a
teams, like, get it done. Like the Dodgers, every day they bring up a new pipeline. Guy. And, yeah,
you got, the Rays, it starts like that. The issue is Breslow and his crew just got here. It's gonna take like 3 years for that pipeline to fully develop to the point where the Red Sox are where those teams are and have those arms just kind of available at all times, and like guys who probably could be big league starters just waiting in the wings in AAA. It's hard to get there. I wish they had at least some semblance of it so they could start a little bit higher than ground zero.
Yeah, no, it's hard. I appreciate that it's hard, but like to have nothing, I just don't understand. Like at least to give credit to Chaim Bloom, he would take a ton of flyers on guys. And I would just like to see a little bit more of that. That's why I like the Johan Ramirez thing today. People laugh. No. Maybe this guy turns into something in AAA. You never know. I guarantee you they're going to tell him, just throw your breaking ball a million times. Nobody hits it. You get beat up.
I don't think he has options. I think he's coming. I think he's coming right here.
Oh, that's right. He doesn't have options. He doesn't. So he has to be on the major league team. Sick.
Yeah.
So sink or swim.
Yeah, they'll work with him. Yeah, sink or swim.
Yeah, I mean, but point remains. He's still a flyer on a guy, which is the grander point. You need to have more options than this. They keep going to the same guys, and it's like, boys, please. Please.
Create more options, though, because you'll option a guy like Bailey Horn who has options. So it does create depth, but they're going to have to do it again. They got to get another guy to do it. They're just so not equipped to withstand anything right now. And I don't know. Maybe it'll be that Garcia guy from the Angels that John Heyman insists on tweeting 10 times a day. Maybe it'll be a guy that we have that hasn't been brought up.
They need another Cam Boozer, a guy who just, like, you bring him up, don't expect much, and he clicks. Like, if you take a bunch of shots on guys like that, eventually one's going to click. The problem is it's kind of late for that, so I'm advocating for something that I don't even know if is possible, and that's how confusing the situation is to navigate.
Yeah, for now it's a trade.
Yeah.
It's just there's really no getting around it. They're short arms. It's costly. I don't think, like, they knew that they were going to be short arms in LA. They definitely knew they were going to be short arms in Colorado. They knew they were going to be short arms until these guys got back. It's not a secret. I don't think they thought it could have possibly bit them in the ass as much as it has, because they could be 500 or even above 500, probably should be above 500 since the break if their bullpen could have held some of these games together, but that's just not the way it's been. And to be honest with you, I don't see an end to this in sight, because they just aren't getting rest. So until guys like Martin and Slayton come back and they get a trade addition, and like that is, the core talked about it, they could be back by the end of the road trip, ends August 9th. Didn't sound like he thought it was going to happen like that, but he wouldn't rule it out. So like maybe like early to mid, like maybe August 8th through 15th would be a good target range to look for those two guys to come back, and hopefully they get a trade addition before then. And then later on, Hendricks comes back and the bullpen looks entirely different than it does today. But
yeah,
you got to get to that point, and that's going to be really fucking hard.
All right. Before we move on, last thing, really quick. This is a question that I've already asked you guys. I want to know if you've changed your mind at all. Would you move Nick York and a little bit more for Tanner Scott? Tanner Scott is a rental. He's a lefty. He's probably the best left. Actually, he's definitely the best left-handed reliever available right now.
So my answer was an easy yes. That being said, I just saw what Carlos Estevez went for. I just saw what Jason Adams went for. You're giving up a lot more than Nick York now for Tanner Scott.
Well, he's a rental. He's a rental. That's the difference.
So is Estevez, though.
Estevez, yeah. But I think that's, you know, not too much. I mean, Lesko might have been a bit over. He completely fell off the top 100 list. I don't know. But we'd be splitting hairs here. But okay, let's say it's like York and Wickelman.
Out.
No, I don't think I will.
I'm running for Tanner Scott.
I think I'm on board with you guys. I think that's a bit.
The price is going to be crazy. Like,
and let's be clear.
I wouldn't say no to just York straight up for Tanner Scott. I'm not doing it for a rental. This is not.
I don't think York is enough. I think it would be like York and a guy like Wickelman,
exactly,
who has had a bad season but has good stuff.
That's what it'll be. I wouldn't even trade half of that package for him.
This is how hard Craig Breslow's job is, because we all just spoke for about half an hour about how we all want to add pitching. And then I say, would you trade your 12th best prospect and then another prospect in the top 30 for Tanner Scott? And all three of us said no. So that's what Craig Breslow has to now navigate in his first year. And he's got, when you're listening, about a day and three quarters. So all the best.
Why did Papelbon just change his Twitter profile picture to a bet logo?
Yeah, I think he had to have lost a bet. He hates the Yankees.
But before, we've talked a lot of pitching, but the Red Sox did make a move. They traded for Danny Jansen. They traded a reasonable package headlined by Cutter Coffey, the 28th ranked prospect, and Edinson Paulino, who I believe was 15th, and both of those were via Sox prospects. There was a third prospect in there that was not ranked, but a reasonable package for a guy who had a solid first game and maybe was the only guy who really had a good game today. Couple home runs, whatever. I'm being harsh, but he had a solid game, couple hits and a walk. They DFA'd Reese McGuire and brought in Danny Jansen, who I think is a high end backup catcher. He hasn't played very well. He's hitting like 150 or maybe even below that for the last two months, but a swing they like for Fenway Park, hits the ball in the air and pulls it and has done damage against the Yankees. I don't know how much you value that, but I like the addition. I think it's a minor overpay, but I don't know how broken up I can get over a minor overpay when the farm system is as deep with, like, maybe could be like a major league guy, maybe not, and they're going to be Rule 5 eligible in a year type guys. So I'm really not broken up over the overpay. I think they got a guy that they liked, and I think it's good that they targeted a guy that they liked and were willing to just go for it. So that's my thoughts. But Danny Jansen, I don't know. You guys think overpay? You guys like the get? I don't know. What are you at?
I don't think you can classify it as an overpay. If all these trades that we're talking about are overpays, quote unquote, then they're not overpays. That's just
market price.
Yeah, that's market price. I think they paid market price. Is it worth it? I think so. Cutter Coffey, really, really good move by Breslow, because if you look at Coffey's season, he was not playing well. Then he got hot in June, hot-ish in July, and then they moved him. So that's a smart move. Edinson Paulino, Rule 5, chance you lose him? Probably not, but he's blocked by guys who are blocked, like we've talked about before. And then I'm going to be completely honest with you guys and the listeners. I have no clue who that third guy is. That is the bottom of the totem pole in the minors. Did you guys know who that was?
No.
Yeah. Okay. So, and a guy that nobody has ever heard of. So, it's a steep price, but that's the market. So I'm cool with it. And also, he is the best hitter on the planet since coming to the Red Sox. Please tell me if that's not true. It certainly is. He's hitting like
667.
Two for three with a walk. So, yeah. So he's hitting 667, and he's walking every single game. He's the best hitter on the planet. So there you go.
Yeah.
My analysis.
Like Sammy said, it's not – if everybody's overpaying, it's not overpaying. It's market price. And then on top of that, I think what a lot of people do is they see names that they recognize for a rental backup catcher, and it's like, oh, my God, overpay. Oh, my God, they overpaid. I can't believe they overpaid. Look at the grand scheme of things, right? at the major league level right now, you have Hamilton and Romy and Rafaela, if you qualify it, and Story, who's hurt right now, obviously, in the minors kicking around. You have Emmanuel Valdez, going to be up soon. You have Marcelo Meyer. And in the lower levels, you have Nazan Zanatello and you have Yoelín Cespedes. Where in the middle infield are prospects going to jump over? Not one of those guys. All of those guys, not named Marcelo and Story, really. It's slim to none. Like, moving these guys, whatever. That you're going to lose them in the Rule 5. Maybe they don't even make the big leagues. You have an insane amount of depth everywhere. You can make these moves. This is why you have that depth.
You can argue that trading them is getting more out of them than if you held on to them.
Exactly. And that's exactly what people like. Am I allowed to go on a tangent?
Hold on, Pat. Before you do, you're totally right with the prospects. People see a name they recognize and they're like, what? How could you give this guy up? I've heard of him. But I don't know. It's frustrating, but yeah, let's hear the tangent.
Well, hold on. Let me give you the one argument. Right. The one argument. And I'm not making this argument because I do believe they're going to add more. But the one argument would be if they don't end up adding the reliever that they should add, and they don't get another good right-handed bat balance out the lineup, that you used all this prospect capital to get to fill a need that you didn't really have. Like, Reese was not that, but it certainly wasn't as big of a need as the bullpen. And you're using your assets to get that instead. That's the one argument. I'm certainly not going to make that argument today, because I actually do believe that Craig Breslow is going to fix this and he's going to do his part. But right. That's the only argument I'll hear, and I'll hear it in 2 days if it's accurate. Go on your tangent.
Okay. So it's trade deadline season. Okay. People are floating out names, ideas, what we need, what we don't need, whatever. I have seen so many people, their only response to anything involving Nick York for any form of reliever, not superstar, is, I would rather just see what he does at the major league level. Fucking where, bro? Where is he going? Where are you playing Nick York? Are you scared to sit Tyler O'Neill, have him play left field like he is in AAA? No, that's ridiculous. You're not doing that. You're going to sit your top seven MVP candidate, Jarren Duran, so he can play right field? No. Are you going to play him at second base when he physically is not a good defender and might not even hit at the major league level? No, you're not. If this were last year, you sell at the deadline, you're just seeing what you have. Sure, maybe. If you can substantially upgrade this team in any way, shape, or form by giving up Nick York as any part of the package without it being an insane overpay, you do it. That is my two cents.
Pat, I agree. Again, also to add on to him playing second base, he'd be a platoon. He's a young kid, a talented young kid. He needs every day at bats. I don't like him in a platoon role. He's not a guy that they see as a platoon player. They probably see him as a future everyday guy, whether it's here or elsewhere. So I don't think that him coming up makes a ton of sense. And there's also the thought of, well, what if he doesn't hit well right away? What if he doesn't immediately translate to Major League Baseball? We have seen that happen 4,762 billion times with prospects who come up and they don't immediately click. Jackson Holliday is the number one prospect in all of baseball, and he got chewed up and spit out by Major League pitching immediately. I think he got, 1 for 37, something crazy like that. So it's not out of the question that Nick York doesn't play well in Major League Baseball when he first comes up. He could also be unbelievable. But the thing is, we don't know. He'd need to get everyday reps for us to know, in all likelihood, and it just doesn't make sense right now. In September, if they don't have anyone else and they want to give it a shot, sure. Let's see what he can do. Maybe he's great. Maybe Von Grissom hasn't clicked yet. Maybe David Hamilton has slowed down. Maybe there's an injury and he needs to fill in. Who knows? But like right now, I'm with you. I don't think Nick York, and this is not saying he's not a good player. The reason we include him in these trade talks is because he is good. He can get you something. He's a talented player. We like the profile. So sorry for tangenting your tangent, but yeah, I agree. It's not the time. Yeah.
Follow up, not really a tangent, but the other part of this is you have so much middle infield depth throughout the system and outfield, including the major league level. if you do, let's say you do call up Nick York when last week, right? When people were, oh, I'd rather just hold on, whatever. If this is a guy that even this offseason you think might be a valuable trade chip for something that you truly need, and you call him up to the major league and he absolutely fucking flounders, that decimates trade value. If he comes up to that major league level after raking in AAA and cannot hit major league pitching, you have to wait until next deadline for him to either A, get his footing back in the minors and become, okay, this guy can still hit, or find his footing whenever at the major league level. It's a gamble to have him come up. He's more valuable right now where he is. And if a team values him the same, if not more than you do, and you can get a righty bat, a reliever, in a package for a starter, you do it.
And not to mention, too, is that if you call up Nick York, he needs a 40-man spot. And
yeah,
if you acquire guys at the deadline, they're going to need 40-man spots. And when guys like Tristan Casas come back, when Liam Hendricks comes back, I believe there's another on the 60-day that I'm forgetting that's supposed to come back. I could be wrong on that. But
Fulmer's not back.
You're going to need these 40-man spots. No, he's not.
Next year, yes.
But they're going to need these spots. And if you put York on the 40-man, you can't take him off. So that's going to be... It's not worth it. It's just not worth it. I think you trade him, and if you don't trade him, he finishes the year and hopefully finishes it strong, and he's used in a package in the offseason, because you guys said over and over, he is blocked, and he's blocked. He's not blocked, but Paulino's blocked by the guys who are blocked, or was.
York's just regular blocked. Yeah. You know what's annoying is, this is mostly a me thing, but when there's a York hypothetical, and people are like, what's with the Nick York hate? Like, dude, if I hated him, I'd say release him or demote him. I'm tired of that. Tired of that.
Yeah.
Let's be adults, everyone.
So final, just to back Danny Jansen for a sec before I ask you guys one question, and then we'll do a quick preview before we wrap it. But final thought on Jansen. I do have my reservations now as to whether they are going to prioritize the right-handed bat. Maybe it's a backup plan, but like you saw it tonight with Danny Jansen DHing, now against left-handed pitching, they'll start both catchers at this point, the way the roster is right now. They'll start both catchers. They'll have righties that way. This gets the lefty. Usually it's Yoshida DHing that gets him out of the lineup against lefties. So interesting roster fit that way too, but it's still, to me, not enough. I really do need to see that established right-handed bat. And like in the future, it's going to need to be like a everyday kind of right-handed bat. But for this year, hopefully it's just someone who can hit left-handed pitching. But my question for you guys before we put a bow on this, I mean, this is the last time that we're going to be recording before the trade deadline actually passes and programming update. We're not going to have an episode for you tomorrow. In lieu of that, we're going to record something after the deadline passed, we'll drop that for you. We'll evaluate everything deadline wise. But if you could see the Red Sox make one trade, and I think we all understand there are multiple trades to be made here, but if you're going to pick one, and you can give me a specific name if you want, or you can just give me something general if you want, what trade do you want to see them make?
I would say another starting pitcher. Because then you just bump more guys to the bullpen. That's basically helping the bullpen by adding a starter. It's also injury insurance. And I think that I just think pitching is so important right now. These guys are burnt out. Maybe not burnt out, but they're in a rut. This is like the dog days of summer. It's fucking hot outside and humid, pissing rain tonight. It's tough. So I wouldn't mind another arm. I would prefer it to be a starter. I haven't really been advocating for that much since Paxton happened, because I think it's unrealistic, but your question was, what would you want? So I would say another starter.
I'm going to throw out a name that I don't think anybody's really thrown out, but there's rumors he's on the market potentially for an offensive upgrade. David Bednar.
Oh,
I think that's an interesting back end guy that you might be able to buy low on. They're very much in the wild card, but they are desperate for offense. and they don't have a bad bullpen by any means. It's not that it's not star studded, but I mean, Colin Holderman has a 2.09 ERA this year. Like, they have some guys who are just really overperforming. Bednar's not one of those guys. He's not performing well. 4.84 ERA, 36 strikeouts and 35 innings. I think there's a fit there if you flip some offense. I'm not saying you give up an O'Neill type, but if you can work around that offense for pitching, I think you do it.
I want to say, and this is just my hunch, but I want to say he's been better lately, though. I'm going to try to pull that up and see if that's right.
And I'm going to look. I like Bednar is interesting. So he's a relief pitcher with a lot of control. I'm talking about term, not pitching control, although he does have that too. But he's under contract through 2026. So
true, yeah.
I kind of don't know if that's good or bad, because
I think he's going to be expensive.
Oh yeah, he's going to be expensive, but I mean, like, he could be a closer next year too. Like, because Kenley's not coming back. You don't really know what Hendricks is going to look like. If Bednar's pitching better, that could be your closer. But Gordo, you just alluded to it. Pricey, probably.
Yeah. So his ERA by month in 12 games in April, he had 11.7. But then in May, in 14 games, he had a 2.03. June in 8 games, he had a 2.25. And July in only 3 games, he has a 3. I think he got hurt at one point. He might be expensive. I don't know if a closer. I don't know. I'm always going to be, and you guys probably know this by now, having talked baseball with me for as many hours as we have, but I hate giving up big packages for relief pitchers when I see so many teams get a guy and just make him something. So that my answer to this question is, I just want to see them get a left-hander who strike guys out, and it doesn't have to be anyone that anyone knows. I just, and I'm open to all shapes and sizes of it. It can be a guy who is expiring and get on the cheap. It can be a guy that no one knows and has 4 years left of control, and they get him and bring him in and tweak a couple of things, and all of a sudden he's good. I have that faith in them to be able to do that now. That, and I didn't have that faith up until this year. I do believe in them to be able to do that. So that's where I'm at. And it's crazy to me that I'm saying bullpen over right-handed bat just based off of how I felt for so many months. But I think that it's so important that you pick up wins in this next week and a half stretch when you're playing the teams that you're competing with for the wild card. Like, these games are so important. You can't just wait it out until everyone gets healthy and then hope for the best. Like, you gotta be decisive and you gotta get it done now.
Go get Tyler Rogers. That'd be cool.
Yeah. He's a lefty.
He's a righty. Tyler, not the other Rogers.
Oh, Tyler.
I was thinking of Taylor. Guy. Yeah. That would be sick. Yeah, I'm looking at him right now. He's got a low 3 ERA. He's a rental, and he's like 32 years old. Let's do that. Let's get that dude. Tyler Rogers.
Literally just get a good reliever. Just get a good reliever. Just get a good reliever. Just get a good reliever.
Dude, and I want the submarine guy. This is going to be my new thing. This is going to be my new thing, is I want the submarine guy who throws from 1 inch off the ground. That's my new thing. It's going to be really annoying. I'm going to talk about it all the time.
All right, fellas. And just as a programming here, we are going to absolutely, we wanted to maximize the amount of time we had to talk like the series and talk big picture and talk deadline. So series preview is going to be mega fast. Just quickly give you the pitching matchups. It's Logan Gilbert versus Pivetta. It's Luis Castillo versus James Paxton. And it's George Kirby versus Brian Baio. So you're facing all of their guys. God. All right. Let's quickly do this. I'll give you guys just a really quick score update here. Series, I was the only one who got it right. I got a point. Sammy's got 11. I've got 7. Pat and Joe have 6. I'll go first to give you guys a little bit of time to think about your answers. I'm going to say that the Reds take 1 out of 3 in this series. I just don't. I'm not picking them to win a series until they win. Who wants to go next?
I'll also go 1 out of 3. I think they have a history of roughing up Castillo. I think they do it again. I think they take the middle game.
All right. The Mariners have not lost since they got Randy Arozarena. Red Sox are ice cold. I think you guys know where I'm going. I'm going to do the same thing I've been doing all year. Red Sox sweep. Red Sox are going to sweep.
All right, I respect that. I respect that. I respect that. Nothing, that's your pattern.
Nothing has made sense all year. I'm going to say this every time because it keeps on being true. Nothing has made sense all season long. I think that the only thing that makes sense is nothing making sense. So I'm going to keep going with that. Red Sox are going to sweep this red-hot Mariners team and their three-headed monster of pitchers somehow.
Joe, that's what do you got?
That is ballsy, Sammy, but I'm kind of on your same length, but I'll go 2 out of 3. I think
respect.
Rebounding from Wednesday might be tough with a depleted bullpen, but I'll go 2 out of 3. They get the first two, they lose the third one.
Yeah, and as you guys know, my girlfriend is from Seattle, so pray for me.
Enjoy this one.
These next 3 days. Pray for me.
Okay. For Crystal Bomb, Joe and Sammy got a point. So the scoreboard reads, I'm at 14, Pat's at 7, Joe's at 4.
Wait, am I tied with you? You cut out for a second. I didn't hear you.
Oh, no, you're down by 1.
Okay.
14, 7, 4.
All right. You want me to go first?
Yeah, take it if you got it.
Okay, Devers.
All right, I'm going to go second. I'm going Willy or Abreu.
Fucking ass. I'm going to go with Sadon.
I will take the new guy, Danny Jansen.
Ooh, I love that. Would take him. I used reverse psychology to make it seem like I was being generous by going first, and then I took Devers because I'm an asshole.
Yeah, you're an asshole like that. But yeah, so that is going to be our show for the day, but we are going to be back in your ears in just a couple of days. The deadline is going to pass, and we will have an all reactions podcast for the very next day. Hopefully good. Hopefully the Red Sox are playing well, but we'll do a series recap the very next day. After that, we're just going to be in your ear and in your ear and in your ear. Sammy, you got something for me?
One last thing we have to mention. We left out a big thing from today. It's still a developing story as we speak.
Oh, true. And we don't have enough said. I was going to bring this up.
Yeah. This can be our group enough said. Tyler. Yeah. The guy who made the sign for Dom Smith, which was then confiscated and unfairly ripped apart by Fenway security. Joe, I put the tweet in the chat. He today finally connected with Dom Smith. He presented his new sign to him. There it is. Beautiful. I love this story. This is the most Bradfo story of all time. It's so like connecting the fans and the players and just like a good feel good story. For everyone other than that security guard, that was that's great. And we and Gordo, Pat and I and Joe too yesterday got to speak with Dom Smith for a while. He is such a good dude. So nice. Doesn't big time you at all. So Tyler's cool. Dom's cool. Great to see.
Dom's chill as fuck. I'll say it over and over again. That dude's the man. But, yeah, super cool. Dom got him BP passes. We saw him while we were doing radio. We brought the sign. And then you could see him on the field in the setup, standing on the field, which must have been awesome, and got to meet Dom after the game. So really happy for him because the sign thing was bullshit, and glad that he got treated right in the end.
And shout out to the Play Tessie / Baseball Isn't Boring listener who said hello to me. Forgot to tell you guys that we got a hello from a fan. So shout out to you if you're listening. Nice.
Yeah, shouts. But we appreciate you guys tuning in. Again, not going to have our normal episode for you guys tomorrow. We're going to have one in 2 days. Deadline's going to pass. So we'll be here to react. But until then, make sure you subscribe. Subscribe. Whether you're listening wherever, subscribe and rate 5 stars. YouTube, WEI page, Play Tessie playlist. You know the deal. Hit the thumbs up button. Rate us 5 stars. If you're on YouTube and you haven't subscribed on the podcast platform, we really appreciate it if you did that because that helps us out a ton. Of socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. But for Sammy and for Pat and for Joe producing, it's Gordo here. Remember, deadline Tuesday, 6 p.m. Keep your ears out, your eyes out, and your ears out. Wednesday morning, we'll be dropping for you. Hopefully good news. Going to be a hectic week leading up until the deadline. So keep your eyes peeled and your eyes on your Twitter feeds. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Peace.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compete.
compare? The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking? I'm James Coe. Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.